Okay, we are going to start off in 1 Samuel, page 291. In the Hebrew scriptures.
What chapter?
It will be chapter 3. I'll ask for a reader in just a second. I'll give you a little sum up where we are. There is a boy, a miracle child, like Melania, like Ruth, that was born. And once he was weaned, he was brought to the house of Eli, or Yahweh's house. His name was Samuel. And he was, would somebody read, an adult would read, we're going to need like 1 through 17.
In the King James or?
No, in the regular Rotherham. So.
1 through what?
Okay.
17.
Now the boy Samuel was ministering unto Yahweh before Eli. And the word of Yahweh had become rare in those days. There was no well-known vision. But it came to pass at that time, when Eli was lying down in his place, his eyes having begun to be dim, he could not see. Though the lamp of Elohim was not yet to be put out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of Yahweh, where was the ark of Elohim, that Yahweh called unto Samuel and said, Behold me. So he ran unto Eli and said, Behold me, for thou called me. And he said, I called not, return, lie down. So he went and lay down. And again Yahweh called once more, Samuel. Then rose Samuel and went unto Eli and said, Behold me, for thou called me. And he said, I called not, my son, return, lie down. Now Samuel was as yet knew not Yahweh, nor as yet had been revealed unto him the word of Yahweh. And again Yahweh called, Samuel, a third time. Then he arose and went unto Eli and said, Behold me, for thou called me. Then did Eli perceive that Yahweh was calling the boy. So Eli said to Samuel, Go lie down, and it shall be, if he call unto thee, that thou shalt say, Speak, Yahweh, for thy servant is listening. And Samuel went and lay down in his place. Then came Yahweh and stood and called as time after time, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, Speak, for thy servant is listening. And Yahweh said unto Samuel, Lo, I am doing a thing in Israel, at which both ears and every one that heareth it shall tingle. In that day will I confirm against Eli all that I have spoken against his house, beginning and finishing. Therefore do I tell him that I am about to judge his house unto time's age abiding. For the iniquity which he knoweth, in that his sons are cursing Elohim, and he hath not rebuked them. And therefore have I sworn, respecting the house of Eli, that the iniquity of the house of Eli shall receive no propitiatory covering by sacrifice or by present unto time's age abiding. And Samuel lay until morning and rose early in the morning, and opened the doors of the house of Yahweh. But Samuel feared to tell the appearing unto Eli. So Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. And he said, Behold me. And he said, What is the word which he spake unto thee? I pray thee, do not hide it from me. So let Elohim do to thee, and so let him add, if thou hide from me a word out of anything which he has spoken unto thee.
You think you got it rough?
Uh-huh.
This was the beginning of Samuel's ministry. Here he is, a child, and he has to go tell his stepfather, you know, this is the guy that is raising him, you guys are all going to die. Because of how wicked this is. Would that make you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
I have a hard time telling somebody they're drinking too much. Would you quit boozing it up? I'm uncomfortable with that. Here's the thing, it's going to be, they're all going to die. Golly, and Yahweh said that everybody who his ear hears is going to tingle when they hear what I'm getting ready to do. This is the beginning of Samuel. And what did he do? He just delivered the message. Did he want to deliver the message? No. No, he didn't. But what a great example with Eli. Eli says, don't hide anything from me. And if you do, let it all be on you. How many times I used to pick on Eli before my dad pointed out how many righteous things this guy actually did. How many times do I tell people, why don't you give me like an 80% truth? Butter it up a little bit. You know, I don't want you to be that honest. Really? The only time we usually get that honest with people is after a big blowout in a fight. Okay, as long as we're being honest, the gloves are off, your breath stinks. Now it comes out. You don't like my macaroni or whatever. But here's the whole thing. Samuel says, lay it at me. Or Eli does, and Samuel does. Was Samuel rewarded? Yeah. He was incredibly rewarded, not only in that life, but we're going to get to meet him someday. We're going to get to hear him, when he was probably your guy's age, go, so Samuel, what was it like to have to go hear Yahweh the first time? You know, he's going to be sitting there, man, it was weird, it was scary. The first time he said, behold me, who? Can you imagine Yahweh and the angels watching? You ever see him with a little kid, you go, yoo-hoo! Who was that? Start walking around, he's like watching, and then it says Yahweh stood by there. How neat is that? Samuel, here he is, and was he faithful? Yeah, faithful with a little bit. But Eli warned him, don't deviate from what Yahweh has said. Galatians 1 in the Greek, page 191. We're going to be going big lefts and big rights. Hebrews, page 191 in the Greek. Thank you. That was a great reading too, Troy. Here's Galatians 1. It's gonna be a warning. If anybody changes the word, and it's actually 1:6-9 is about people are creating their own doctrines. And here's Yahweh through Christ to Timothy, through Paul says, look, he has not given you a spirit of cowardice. Who here likes to be called a coward? Here it is. He didn't give you a spirit of coward. Why was he warning Timothy? Because the people in your congregation aren't going to want the truth. They're going to have itching ears, and they're going to heap up their own doctrines for people to teach them what they wanted. That's not very long after Paul, was it? But neither was Aaron and the golden calf after Moses. We're talking about 40 days there, right?
Yeah.
People will create their own doctrines to teach what they want. And so in Galatians 1:9, actually if you want to read the whole context, it's 6-9, but I'll read verse 9. Chapter 1 of Galatians. As we have said before, even now again, I say, if anyone is announcing unto you a glad message aside from that which ye have accepted, accursed, that's bitterly cursed, let him be. I say, don't change the word. And actually, this is the same as Eli's warning. I put a footnote there. Don't change the word. The author's in the room.
Yeah.
Have you ever lied or exaggerated in front of another witness and they go, whoa, wait a minute, that fish wasn't that big. Well, this isn't talking about fish stories. This is talking about what Yahweh says. He goes, accursed let them be. And so Eli's warning, and in here in Galatians, actually, and why did Yahweh record Eli's warning? Because it was Yahweh's warning through Eli. He did a good thing. We're going to get to meet Eli someday, I bet. He was weak because he didn't reprove his kids. But don't deviate from the text. So what? What if it's just one little word? Turn to Genesis 1. And Eli's warning is what I'll kind of call this deviating from the text, which I've done it. You know, anytime I'm telling stories, I run small businesses. I don't always want to be honest with somebody when they're going broke. You're spending too much money. What's that supposed to mean? You got about 2 years left. Oh, that's not fun. But am I loving them if I hide it? Right? No, you got to be honest. But that's finance. That's not even the word. But in Genesis 1, we're going to talk. I guess what I was going to put down here, like Eli's warning with Samuel, and the warning in Galatians 1 is: do you think you'll get away with it? I mean, I've done it. I've lied. It's intentionally at times. Hopefully, as I got older, it was unintentional. or without malice. But when we lie about Yahweh's word, do you think we're going to get away with it?
No.
We'll be saved. But it says everything we do is going to be tested with fire. And some things will be burned up. The good things, though, will be receive rewards for it. We're going to watch a whole highlight film of our whole life. And if we lied about something, will we get away with it? No. And so the whole thing would be with Eli or even Samuel. Here's Eli's warning to Samuel, going, don't hide a single thing. The author is in the room. Okay, actually, it's a really good idea when it comes to the Word. Specifically, if it's going to be teaching us something we don't want to know. And actually, this is going to be a very light teaching. Actually, it's going to be a really fun teaching. But it's going to show you, just in case you kids are wondering, oh boy, here we go. Genesis chapter 1, where in the King James, with my King James reader. King James was written how many years ago, anyone?
500.
Almost?
400 and 50.
It was 1611. So 400 years ago.
Genesis what?
Chapter 1, verse 1. The book called Genesis. Genesis chapter 1. Okay. King James reader, will you read verse 1 and 2, please?
In the beginning, Elohim created the heaven and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep.
Okay, that's good right there. What is the Rotherham translation? Did it say the earth was without form and void?
It had become
mm-hmm. without form and void. For 400 years through the King James, people taught that the earth was without form and void. So basically, Yahweh started off with a dark, voidless, messed up creation. Okay? And if you could read the footnote and the Rotherham. So what the Rotherham's going to do is he's going to be like Samuel. I'm just going to tell you what Yahweh said. It's between you and him. You want to know what's in the Word? Here it is. But King James is going to say it was without form and void. Rotherham is going to show it became waste and wild. And that's the Hebrew word tohu va-bahu. And actually, you see the footnote E? Can you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
Tohu va-bahu. I think it's va-bahu. But it actually says, I think in Jeremiah, Yahweh doesn't create anything without form and void. So if you look at a King James, if you look at the Hebrew words, it says he created without form and void. And then you look at Jeremiah, he says, I don't create anything out of form and void. What's happening here? Actually, and then we're going to come back to Genesis, but turn to the New Testament, page 245.
You down to King James?
Yeah. You can use the Rotherham in there. And as you guys get there, you're going to 1 John chapter 1, verse 5. You're going to read. I'm going to go back to Genesis 1. And see if... Okay. Tim, would you read 1, verse 5, please?
Chapter 1, verse 5.
Yes, please.
And this is the message which ye have heard from him and are reporting unto you, that Yahweh is light, and in him is no darkness at all.
Okay. Yahweh is light, and in him is no darkness at all. And so we're going to go back to Genesis 1, in the beginning. In the beginning what? Elohim. Yahweh. That's the very beginning. He's got no beginning and no end. He created the heavens and the earth. And the earth, and it says that there's darkness on the face of the earth. I thought he is light, and there in them is no darkness.
Mm-hmm.
We have an apparent contradiction.
Yeah.
And it all has to do with the King James was not loyal to Yahweh's word. They changed it. It is not the earth was without form and void. It had become. Anybody ever heard of Satan? Mm-hmm. Lucifer. Satan is not a proper noun. The translators capitalize the S so you know it's talking about an individual. But Satan is Satan. Lucifer, it means shining one. It's not a proper noun either. It's not even his name. The bad guy doesn't even get a name. When did he fall? Because he used to be an angel, right? Like, we don't know when he fell.
Genesis 1-2, something happened between Genesis 1-1 and Genesis 1-2. And Yahweh says, if anybody changes one thing of my word, they are cursed. What are the odds in the King James, the first deviation is in the second verse?
Yeah.
That didn't take very long, did it? Wow! Mm-hmm. So what? What's the big deal? Because say, but in the other translation, you go, God is light, in him is no darkness. Then you go, in your own Bible, it says, and not your own Bible, in my own Bible I used to have, it says that he started off in darkness. Now, how does that even make sense? And well, here's what people do with good intentions. Well, what he really means is, mm-hmm. you just say chapter and verse. What happened was, Yahweh is light, and then a rebellion happened in verse 2. We don't know how, when that rebellion actually happened, but now we're going to turn to page 249. Actually 244, so right by 1 John. So just on the left page. Now we're going to read about something. I want you to share with Mal if you want. We're going to be flipping a whole bunch. We'll be in, this is going to be 2 Peter chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 5. So, for this they willfully forgot.
Forget, excuse me.
I already deviated. That there were heavens. See the word heavens there, guys? Remember the heavens, okay? From old and earth, on account of water and by means of water, compacted by God's word, by which means the world that then was with water being flooded perished. This is not a trick question, kids. What do you think this is talking about? A flood. What do you think that was? Noah?
Or before.
Okay, so that's most people, they're going to say that's Noah's flood. Ah, so here it is. The earth was flooded. We'll come back to this, but we'll now turn to Genesis chapter 6. This is page 38 in the Greek, in the Hebrew. So keep your finger there in 2 Peter. Page 38, chapter 6. So there was a great flood. Oh, it's just Noah's flood, right? People are going to project that. That's Noah's flood. Troy, would you read chapter 6, verse 13?
So Elohim said unto Noah, the end of all flesh hath come in before me, for filled is the earth with violence because of them.
And I'll read the rest, okay? Behold me, then destroying with them the heavens and the earth.
Nope.
What's it say?
The earth.
The earth. Do you see heavens on there? What did we just read in 2 Peter?
Heavens and the earth.
Then we read here, earth. You see the footnote E? Look down at the very bottom. What does that say?
Land.
The land. What are we talking about here? There's two periods in the word where the earth was covered with water. The second one is the most famous, Genesis 6. What was the first time, the first period in the word, or another time when the whole earth was covered with water?
We don't know. For sure.
Genesis 1, 2.
We assume that
because
it didn't tell us that.
Sure does. We'll go there right now. Got to back that up. I can't just say it, right? Chapter and verse. Chapter 1, verse 6. So we're kind of deviating, but she had a question. She was, maybe it wasn't covered with water. Chapter 1, verse 6, and Elohim said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it be a means of dividing between the waters and the waters. And God made an expanse and divided between the waters that were under the expanse and the waters that were above and the expanse, and it so was. And God called the expanse heavens, and it was evening and morning. And so if you just read it, and then verse 9, and Elohim said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry ground up here. What I like to think about this is like the polar ice cap started freezing, which meant the water would have received, would have came back. But that's my own imagination. But it was covered then. There's two periods of time the earth was completely covered with water. Okay, so we go back to Second Peter, it says, what is it talking about in Second Peter? When the heavens and the earth were destroyed, well, what do we know? Well, we know that there's only one other time where the earth was completely covered with water, and that would have been in Genesis 1-2. What else do we know about Genesis 1-2? Something happened. A rebellion happened in Genesis 1 verse 2. Is it specific in there? No. But what else do we know? Just like scientists. We know that Satan fell at one point. He took one third of the angels too, right? Or the messengers. When was that? We have no idea. But if you look at Genesis 1-2, probably right around then, okay? So we're kind of looking, go, okay. So they would see there's two times that the earth was covered with water, and then in Genesis 6:13 we find out that the flood of Noah, only the land was destroyed, not the heavens. So on a timeline, which is I have a timeline here. I'll give to somebody. Which with me, it really helps seeing a spreadsheet. Give me a plots. They get a good idea. But on a timeline, Genesis 1:1, we have no idea how long that time is. The calendar didn't begin until it says, and it was day one. And that was not Genesis 1:1. I think it's Genesis 1:6. That's when our calendar began. Genesis 1:1, how long was that? We have no idea. Could have been a billion years. Could have been a Google years. The Google is the biggest number that we know of. It could have been any, right? But what we do know is in the very, very, very beginning, and all this stuff's going to start coming, meshing back together. In the very beginning, there was Yahweh. A rebellion happened. And then there was darkness because waste and wild. It became dark or waste and wild. And then darkness came. So in the word, darkness is almost like Yahweh turning his back. What fellowship is there with light? What fellowship does light have with darkness? There is no fellowship. When Egypt was being judged, darkness was a judgment. When Jesus Christ died, there was darkness. Mm-hmm. And so the earth rebelled. This is probably Satan. And darkness is on the earth. There's no more light. It's covered with water. What's going to happen to that earth? It's just a frozen ice ball. As far as we know, this is when the dinosaurs were. Would that kill all the dinosaurs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a major ice age. Yeah, there's no sun, there's no light. The sun wasn't even created. There was no light. But this big thing was frozen until we read a little bit later in Genesis 1:6. And then what happens like in Genesis 1:6? Yahweh starts thawing out his planet. Here's his little animals rebelling, going, "Aha, we got you! We're gonna take Yahweh hostage." Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Here's your little terrarium, your little ants, your little ant farm, and they're picketing. We'll never bow to you. And you're like, really? Really? I think I'm just going to stick you inside the freezer. Yeah, let me know how that works out. Close that. I'll be back. I'm going to go on vacation, come back 3 days later. Oh, look, they're all frozen. Okay, let's just shake this thing up, put some more seeds in there. Here's Yahweh with his earth. The Milky Way galaxy, from left to right, is 100,000 light years long.
Yeah.
A light year means it's 6 million miles an hour. If you could go is the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second, it would take a human being 100,000 years to go left to right. That came out of Yahweh's mouth. And here's his little bitty earth. Oh, we'll never bow down. He's like, really? Really? Turn the lights off. He turns the lights on, it's frozen. They started back over. Here's Adam and Eve. So here's the timelines. And that'll be Genesis 1:3 is when he starts over again. Now, Genesis 1:2 was a rebellion. As far as we know, that's when Satan, the angels, as far as we know, that's possibly when the dinosaurs were all on there, all these other creatures we've never seen before. A lot of Christians, because they don't understand that word in Genesis 1:2, they'll say dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark. They have to force it. Because they won't look at that one word where their translations change the word. The rebellion happened before Noah's Ark. As far as we know, the dinosaurs got frozen with all with whatever happened before. Whether were kind of creatures that looked like humans, they called cavemen. That they were not in the image of Yahweh. Nothing was created in the images of Yahweh until the Garden of Eden. Now we'll turn to in Genesis 1:28 was one of the first commandments. Mel, why don't you read verse 28.
And Elohim blessed them, and Elohim said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth."
Fill the earth and subdue it. Remember that, okay? Genesis 6:13. Okay? What happened by Genesis 6? Everybody's got so wicked that all their thoughts were only wicked, with an exception of Noah and his wife and a couple family members. You think you're a minority? You think you're a small Bible group? Can you imagine? Here's Noah, and the whole billions of people are just only wicked, living like in Baghdad. Can you imagine having a Bible study? And everything's okay. Yes, I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward. Here it is. But here's Noah. By Genesis 6, there's Yahweh's going to wash away all the rest of these people. It's another judgment, just like what happened in Genesis 1-2. Let me see. And chapter 6, verse 13. Would somebody read that?
So Elohim... Oh, go ahead, Isaiah.
No, it's okay. So Elohim said unto Noah, the end of all flesh hath come, and before me, for fear the earth with violence, because of them, behold me, destroy them with the earth.
So you're going to destroy the earth? All right. And then in 9, verse 1, after the flood, all the rebellious people are dead again. Mm-hmm. Remember Yahweh washing away the Egyptians? Oh, you're so intimidating. You're so intimidating. Just wash. There you go. Oh, boy. Enjoy fish. Fish food. Come out, fish. Come out, crabs. Have some Egyptian. They're nice and fatty. Look at all these houses. Think of all the fake coral reefs that Yahweh created with the Egyptians. Oh, look! My little crab, they love their chariots. Ooh, and here's these little fish. They love these little skeletons they're living in. Thank you, Egyptians. Anyway, where were we? Oh, okay. Now back to where we were. Here's Yahweh with these rebellious people. And then at Genesis 9, Yahweh starts over with Noah. And so Elohim blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and what?
Fill the earth.
Yes.
Is that the first time you heard that?
No.
It's the second time. What are they commanded to do?
Yes.
Fill the earth. Okay. Now this is free Telios Ministries, www.telios.com. Under E.W. Bollinger, you can click on the PDF. It will give you a timeline, a whole biblical timeline from Genesis, the first Adam, Adam and Eve, to the birth of Jesus Christ. You know how cool this is? I was going to get a whole board out here and draw pictures and stuff, but it's hard for me to stay on target. Okay, what seems longer ago? King Tut and his tombs, the Egyptians, or George Washington?
King Tut.
That's really old. George Washington's kind of old, right? At least George Washington knew English.
Yeah.
Okay. What seems really old? George Washington or Abraham Lincoln?
George Washington.
Abraham Lincoln seemed very old compared to George Washington, King Tut, King David, the Philistines. No, not very old. Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War is about 140 years ago. Not that long ago. I went to Europe and it was crazy. I was on top of a church that was 1,200 years old. That was neat. I was a little worried. I don't know what kind of roofing they did back then. But anyways, you can look on this timeline. 6,000 years. Out of the 6,000 years, 1/6 of it was Adam's life. The first Adam.
Wow.
That's how long this guy lived. And you know what's really neat with this timeline from here to here? And you'll get to see it on this appendix. On this timeline, he had a son after Abel was murdered. The son was Seth. Adam starts here in the Garden of Eden, lives 900 years, and he dies right here. Noah was born right here. 140 years after Adam died. When Noah was being raised, his father probably knew Adam.
Yeah.
Dad, how do you know about the garden? Well, Adam told me. You know, here's Noah's dad. It could have been 500 years old. What's also neat is that Adam's son, Seth, died 14 years before Noah. Do you think Noah's dad knew Seth?
Yeah.
That's a neat family.
Yeah.
And then you have that overlaps. Wow, bam, bam. And then you get Noah, and you know Noah almost lived until Abraham?
No.
You get these timelines. You start looking at this whole thing. This whole timeline is really short. Now, on this, you can download this Appendix 50. Somebody read, I need a reader. Hand it to Mamaw. Please read the green. No, but don't read it yet. Now we're going to turn to Genesis chapter 10. Page 41. You don't have to turn them off because you're going to read the highlight. And we're reading, here's Noah, here's a rebellion, a flood. A rebellion, a flood. There's lots of rebellions and floods. And then here's Noah, starts all over again. And then after this, if you read, who was it? Not Alfred Edersheim. Who was the other, who was it? The Hebrew historian?
Josephus.
Josephus says that the Tower of Babel with Nimrod, what they believed, this is not in the scripture, is that they were going to build a tower so tall that Yahweh couldn't flood them out. That's what the Jews believed at the time of Josephus, about 100 AD. So what, you guys ever heard of the Tower of Babel? Mm-hmm. Heard of Babel? They're building this huge tower, and we don't know why. But as far as Josephus says, they're going to build a tower so tall that Yahweh couldn't flood it. He's going to flood us again, so what we'll do? Oh, you're really going to get it, guys. Anyways, you start reading through chapter 10, verse 1. Here's all these different people. Here's the famous Nimrod. it's a biblical name. Nimrod is a very good hunter, not a good guy. But he was one of the guys who's going to build this tower. And what is Yahweh's people doing again? They're going to rebel. Ah, shake their fist at Yahweh. We go down to verse 25. And to Eber was born two sons. Mel, why don't you read that?
25.
The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided. See the footnote D? Peleg. Peleg. So what? This book is our instruction book to life. It has all the answers we need. Everything we need. Where were dinosaurs? Genesis 1-2. Well, how did they die? 2 Peter 3. There was a flood. What about the fish that swam around? That wouldn't kill the fish, would it? And what if you froze them? Yeah, it sure would. Okay, now we got... Oh, all right, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, not interesting, but... Now, Peleg, what happened with Peleg? The earth was...
The earth was divided.
Divided. Read E.W. Bullinger's footnote.
Genesis 10:25 and something. The name of the one was Peleg because in his days the earth was divided. In both places the word is Peleg, to divide or eater. I'm so sorry, I can't.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, you better. This is really good.
Yeah, I'll go.
Hitherto the earth had been one and undivided and apparently surrounded by the waters. In example, Genesis 1, in the days of the 15th from Adam, the earth was divided. I'm sorry, it's really hard to read.
That's okay. It's a facsimile from the 1910. It's kind of old.
So am I.
The earth was divided. Look, here's the earth today. Does it look like this could have fit over here?
Yeah,
does it look like Africa could have possibly fit over here, and all this could all fit together? Did you know that?
It's like a puzzle.
And so you go on when it was a supercontinent. This is what they believed, and actually we studied in geography was that they would find gold, certain kind of golds from here in South America that was also found right here in Africa. There are certain minerals down here in South Africa. They're also found down here in South America. Hmm. It's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
When was the earth? It used to be looked something like this. Here's Africa. Here's South America. What happened? Genesis 10:25. Yahweh divided the earth. Well, that would be a pretty cataclysmic earthquake, huh? How could that even be possible? When you ask yourself that, how is that possible? Is a virgin birth possible? Jesus Christ being dead 3 days and three nights, being resurrected, is that possible? Okay, so when we're looking at these things, because other times we'll look at science and that's not even possible. Okay, well how do you feel about Mary getting pregnant without sexual intercourse? Is that possible? No. Okay, well, that's the difference between you and I. So what happened here? Yahweh separated all the earth from here to here. Now we're going to keep reading here in verse 10. Here's all the earth. And as far as we know, everybody was still right around this area right here. Okay? Verse 10, or chapter 10. You could read verse 11. Or chapter 11, verse 1. So it came to pass that the earth was all one manner of speech and one stock of words, and it came to pass as they break away onwards that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and dwelt there. Then said they, each man to his friend, come, let us make bricks and burn them. Here's a tower of Babel. Verse 4. And they said, come on, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower with its head in the heavens. So let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be... What were they commanded to do? Fill the earth. Subdue it. They're rebelling again. We're not gonna scatter the earth. We're not gonna subdue it. We're sticking right here. Here's a whole other rebellion. You keep reading, and here they are. And then Yahweh sees they're all speaking the same language, right around probably modern day Iraq, Israel. We're not gonna do it. No. Really? Should I flood it? No, I told Noah I wouldn't flood it again. Oh man, these kids are driving me crazy. Can you imagine the angels sitting there with Yahweh going, man is wicked. What's wrong with you guys? Read down here verse 7. What does Yahweh do? Come, let us go down there and confuse their speech that they may not understand each other, the man of his friend. So Yahweh scattered them from thence. He also scattered them. How in the world did a guy on a canoe start here? La 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 la. Right here. Let's see here. Yeah. And he ended over here in Hawaii. You see how much water this is, guys? Over here? I know what it was. He had a really good canoe. No, I don't think so. How about Samoa? How about down here? Ooh, the Galapagos. How did they get down here? Well, he had a... I don't know. Fill in the blanks. How in the world did somebody start walking from here, all the way here, to here, over here, and they came here, and some of them even stayed up here in Canada. It's 40 below up there. They're called the Inuits. They like it. They live in igloos. Do you know that? They like it there. And the other ones keep migrating down, and they keep going down, down, down. They're so bored. They got so much free time, they're just going to keep walking until they get down here. They walked. Really. They really walked, and that's why man will say 10,000s and millions of years. They had to. That's how they walked it. Why don't they just look at the word? Yahweh scattered his kids. What did he tell them to do in the beginning? Fill my earth. Who's supposed to be taking care of the earth?
Man.
His kids. It's an overgrown garden as far as we know. It needs to be trimmed. It needs to be tilled. This guy deals with landscaping. How often do you got to mow? What? How often do you got to weed? What? It's a lot of work. And here's lazy man over here. Nope, we're going to build towers. You're not going to mow. You're not going to weed. Oh, boy, what are we going to do? So what did Yahweh do? He scattered his people. Do you think he left his children? I think of the guys that are down here in Iraq. Yes, let us build a tower. And also they wake up and they're up here in Alaska. What just happened, man? Whoa! This is not cool. Actually, it's really, really cool. You went from Iraq to up here in the Arctic. Are these Inuits up here? They're called Eskimos. What would have happened? Did Yahweh clothe Adam and Eve? Did he give them aprons? Yes, he's a father. And what he would have done, to the best of our knowledge, is these Eskimos would have, and they would have had an ice house with seal clothing and seal hooks and probably dog sleds, and he would have equipped them. here's how you live here, guys. And then what they would have done is, we got to get some more of these mittens. Look, it looks a lot like that seal. Go get it. How do I get it? Hey, throw this at him. I got it. Yeah, hey, we're pretty good at this. And then the people down here in South Africa or Africa, and you have these people, and you got and Yahweh designed people differently. You got darker skinned people are a lot better for the hotter climates. If you take some people like me, Scottish people down here, we turn red. It's not good on our skin. But Yahweh knew that. He put these people up here and these people down here, scattered all of his kids. And then the people over here in Africa or Australia, the Aborigines are down here in Samoa, they would have woke up. Where are we? Okay, what are we going to do now? What would they have started to do? Fill the earth. Subdue it. So we want to know what happened with the history of the earth and the world. It's all in here. Rebellion over and over and over again. You see how our Father and His patience with us. And so, in Genesis 1:1, and if you go back to most people, so even when you start, this is called gap theory. Is what a lot of people will talk about, the gap between Genesis 1 and 1:2. It's not a theory. To say it's a theory is foolish. It's true. There's a huge gap. It's not a theory. They say theory because they don't want to offend other people. It's not a theory, but if you type on there, if you start, and here they have all this stuff, when you start looking at their justifications on their teachings, it's very foolish. They say, well, this means this and this and this. You start checking out the Hebrew and Greek words, and you're like, you guys are just making stuff up. You're as bad as other people. You're starting whole new doctrines. But where dinosaurs came from, millions of years, and all the rest of this stuff, where do you find dinosaurs? I used to think about that, because I wasn't sure where dinosaurs came from. I'm like, man. And people, anti-theists, means they're anti-God, would say dinosaurs are proof there is no Yahweh. Now Genesis 1:2 says that that's when they would have been destroyed. But people that stick to poor translations that are not like Eli, no, I just want to just teach me what everybody else taught. The itching ears is going to say, no, the dinosaurs do disprove it, or we got to fit all those dinosaurs. We got to fit a brachiosaurus on Noah's ark, Noah's box. We got to put a T-Rex on Noah's box. Do you know what the scriptures, I show this with my son, actually it was Tim's teaching. What did the lions and the tigers eat on Noah's box? It specifically says they ate plants. And it wasn't until after the flood that anything ever even ate meat. It's just, what are the odds? Our Father's instruction manual is complete. You start looking at these things. The earth was divided. Here's Adam and Eve and all the rest of this stuff. And we took it. So this is a compass. Okay? Now, with a compass, this is a cheap compass, but if I stand up, it relies on something more accurate than eyeballing, and it'll say, that's north, right there. Excuse me. No, this is not a cheap compass. Yeah, it's saying, that's north. But anyways, it's cheap. But anyway, but here's the deal. Would this be nice if your airplane broke down, you had no clothes, and you're stuck somewhere in a country, you'd have no reference points?
Yeah.
Would it be nice to have something? You guys ever seen the movie The Edge? They didn't know which way was north. It was all cloudy. Okay, not bad, but I want to show you something. Melania, stand up. Okay, so it's saying, see the white right there? Which way is north?
That one.
Okay, these are batteries, guys. Melania, you watch the compass. Tell me which way north is now. Not point.
That way. How is that?
It's not that way anymore. North is this way. Do you know what happens to it? Do you know what happens to it? If you put a battery near a compass, it changes everything. Now she looks and she goes, okay, well, how far do we got? Well, it's just 600 or 700 miles. Couldn't be that big of a difference, could it? Absolutely would be a difference. That's life and death. Here's a compass, a regular battery. This is the doctrines of men. This is any deviation of Yahweh's word. What's the point? It's just something little. He gave us perfect reference points to life and godliness and everything we need. And anytime somebody just changes a little thing, it changes like that. this right here would be a poor translation. With the translations today, they're not even poor translations. They change things all the time because they don't like it. Because what Yahweh says no longer... Turn to Ephesians 1:3. And this is a prediction. Here's what the new translations will say. They're not saying it yet, but they will. Because their doctrine is contradicting Yahweh's word. Just tell me when you get to Ephesians.
196.
196. Lisette, would you read verse 3?
Which chapter?
Chapter 1, verse 3.
Okay. Blessed be the God and the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Right there. The God of Jesus Christ. Does Jesus Christ have a God?
Yes.
Yeah. That doesn't fit with scriptures or traditions anymore. Look over verse 17. Troy, would you read 1 verse 17?
That the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory.
Does this say Jesus has a God?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do you know how many times it says Jesus has a God? Clearly, 13 times, over and over and over and over and over again. It doesn't fit with today's doctrines. No, they'll say Jesus is God. Mm-hmm. And then you read right there and you go, wait a minute. If Jesus is God and he has a God, how many gods we got? They got to start mixing stuff up again. That's going to be the next translations will start saying they got to get rid of that. Because their doctrines, all of a sudden you read that, somebody in their church reads that, they go, wait a minute, this doesn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. Guess what the next translation is going to do? That thing is gone.
Yeah.
They're going to change it. this right here is a very expensive compass. I was stranded in Zurich. I bought me a gift when Israel and I came back from Kenya. This right here is... Tim knows a lot more about it than I do. But this is an expensive compass. This is not some cheap thing. This is something you can actually bet your life on. What this thing would actually do, if I would have gave Tim a prep, he probably could have explained. But what I can do is I can stand on top of a hill, and I can look through here, and it'll show me the degrees. So there's 120 degrees, and then... when I come down a hill, or if I get on top of a tree or something, I get a reference point. So even if I lose sight of that hill, I can be following this through the valleys, and then I go, no, it's still that direction. How can you be so certain? Because I'm still at 120 degrees. Then you come back and you look at this thing. Okay, here this is. And you can look at all the rest of this stuff, and you can look at the reference points, and this is something you can stake your life on. You get real close to it. Google... Lose services, and every once in a while, Google's wrong. I got that come time with Google Maps. Ah! I felt violated. But I don't even know how to necessarily use this, but anybody that's in the military can go down, you can stay down with maps, and you can just hear, we'll know exactly where we are, we'll get it. Why? Because it's very accurate, and it is faithful to the North Pole, to the poles. But even if you have a good compass, if you bring a battery next to you, do you know what happens?
Deviate.
It screws everything up. You deviate from the text, and all of a sudden, it is absolutely worthless. Well, it's just, you always have an idea. What are you basing your life off of? I thought that the wise man built his house upon the rock, right?
Yeah.
Then the rain comes down. Yeah. And then the foolish man builds his house upon the...
Sand.
What happens if you build a house on sand? It's going to wash away. Well, I'm on the rock. That's for those who do the word. Most Christians today, they don't even know what the word is. Because they're reading translations that they're not even translations, they're paraphrases, and people take things and add things. The woman caught in adultery in John 8, 753 verse 8, is a battery that was inserted into the text. Mm-hmm. 900 AD, never existed before then. The woman, let he who has no sin cast the first stone, not in the text. You put it close to any text, and it completely screws everything up. Mm-hmm. And how many people say, let him who has no sin cast the first stone? People say it all the time.
Yep.
And they'll say these things, and Satan puts something in there, and pastors know it. They won't say anything about it. If you read the footnotes at the bottom of your Bible, it'll say, a lot of them will say, you lip okay? It will say, not in some of the original manuscripts. That's not even true. It's not in any of the original manuscripts. So why do people keep it in there? It was added right around 900 AD. The King James had for 400 years. People taught it. Then they found older manuscripts that went back to 100 AD. They go, hey, the woman caught in adultery is not in here. Ooh, that's really going to upset people. We better keep it in there. People want these Bibles. Is that what Eli would have wanted? Sometimes that's what I want. I want people to agree with me. But see, that's the text. This right here is the Rotherham Bible. Is this easy to look at? Is this intimidating compared to this? Yeah, it might be. But what are you going to base your life off of? The Rotherham Bible is the most accurate Bible there is on the planet. It's not perfect, but boy, is it close. And even as I was looking at what they call gap theory and things, here's these people saying, well, this, not only is there proof there was a flood, but here's it's called King James Version. These people talking about the gap theory. And then they said, well, we know that it was flooded because it says right here, refill, replenish the earth. And they highlighted it. And I went, let me take a look at it. It doesn't say that. I looked at Rotherham, it says fill the earth. It doesn't say replenish. I go, well, where did they get this word replenish? I look up the Hebrew word, it says fill the earth. So they're trying, but they're going to go, as long as they're trying to teach with a King James or an NIV or any of these things, why in the world would you base your life on something like this? And even if this is intimidating, don't go anywhere without it. Specifically, somebody else's life is on the line. But, okay. We'll go ahead and we'll close with manifestations according to 1 Corinthians chapter 14.